Hello, and welcome to the On Iowa Politics podcast for Friday, January 17th, 2014. I'm Mike Weiser, State House Bureau Chief for Lee Enterprises. With me today are James Lynch, political writer for the Cedar Rapids Gazette.
Morning, Mike.
Good morning, James. And Ed Tibbetts, political writer for the Quad City Times.
Hi, James. Hi, Mike.
Hello. You can find us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and subscribe to On Iowa Politics on iTunes. Today, we're going to discuss the state of the state. Terry Branstad makes it official, and Tuesday night caucuses. First up, Governor Terry Branstad delivered the condition of the state speech on Tuesday. It was notable for what was in, and perhaps more so, what wasn't. Branstad said he'd push for broadband access, a program to entice veterans to live in Iowa, and he wanted to freeze college tuition at the region's universities. But he didn't bring up paying for the state's infrastructure, mental health reform, or income tax cuts. James Lynch, you were there Tuesday at the House floor when he was speaking. How did his speech measure up to state of the state's past?
Well, if Charles Dickens was writing this, he would label it a little expectation because there was not a lot on the agenda. And that's not a surprise. Everybody has been sort of preparing us for an efficient, effective, short session. They're not exactly resting on their laurels, but they're saying we did big things last year, so we're just going to tinker around the edges this year. And that was sort of where Branstad was coming from in this state of the state speech. There were no big visionary proposals. I mean, who can be against working to help veterans? Who can be against broadband connectivity? A tuition freeze, everybody loves that. And the only really part of the agenda that might be problematic is the anti-bullying proposal, which alarms people kind of at both ends of the political spectrum, civil libertarians, some of the evangelicals who think that it's, it causes some problems for religious groups and religious schools. So, I would say he's got an agenda that should get 99% approval. And legislators will find something else to fight with the governor about. But this agenda should be a cakewalk.
James, I wanted to ask you, this week we saw Josh Burns, a state representative from Osage and chairman of the House Transportation Committee. He introduced a fuel tax increase bill. This is farther than the fuel tax increase got last year because it was never introduced. Because lawmakers said they didn't have the votes. But Branstad specifically said nothing, I guess, about infrastructure or infrastructure repairs in the state of the state. Do you have any feeling or any sense of, we were talking to Representative Burns, he said he thinks he has the votes. Do you think that this is something that's going to come up in an election year, if you could, if you would bet whether this is going to make it through the House and the Senate, is this going to become problematic or difficult for lawmakers?
Well, it could be a problematic vote for some lawmakers. This is one of those things, issues where, and especially in an election year, where everybody is going to have to hold hands and jump off the bridge together. Leaders have consistently said that it's going to take broad, deep, bipartisan support, not 51 votes in the House and 26 in the Senate. They need 70 votes in the House and 35 or more in the Senate to make this work, sort of to inoculate themselves against attacks from groups who don't like a fuel tax increase. And there are those groups out there, and they're already warning legislators, don't vote for this. We can't afford it. It's not the right time to raise taxes, all the arguments we've heard before. But I think what Representative Burns and others are doing is they're sort of, filling a void in what Branstad has left. He hasn't really shown leadership on this issue, and they're sort of pushing him on it.
Mm-hmm. Second up, the day after the State of the State, Branstad officially kicked off his bid for a sixth term as Iowa governor at a stop in Des Moines, and then was off to other parts of Iowa. On Thursday, the governor stopped in the Quad City. Ed Tibbetts, you were there. How was the governor received? And do you think his reelection is as inevitable as Republican partisans are saying?
Well, he got a good-sized crowd. His message was similar to the state of the state. No mention of gasoline tax or infrastructure, as James points out. He talked about the Home Base Iowa initiative, the kind of things that, as James says, really are designed to appeal to everybody. No mention of Jack Hatch, his likely opponent. He seemed very confident. I think that, the governor, like folks in the legislature, have their agenda to run on, and it's basically what they did in somewhat different for Governor Branstad, but it's basically what they did in the 2013 session. They're going to try to spin it forward. They're going to talk about on the governor's part, the initiative to help veterans and the Healthy Iowa initiative and that sort of thing. And that's what they're going to talk about. There was a lot of bipartisanship that the governor talked about here. There was hardly any Democrat bashing as a part of his announcement. I think probably the closest he came was when he talked about his days as a young military MP in which his unit arrested Jane Fonda back in the 60s. I got a good laugh from the Republican crowd, but that was about as close as he came to any sort of partisanship.
The other thing that I've noticed this week that is interesting is it seems like the rhetoric coming out of the Republican Party of Iowa has changed. They're much more positive about unity, about the governor. And I don't know, maybe you've noticed this too, the news releases they sent out this week just seem a lot more what you would expect coming from the state party office than sort of the sniping that we saw last year sometimes. And with state party warning legislators, don't do this, and Republicans don't stand for that sort of thing. It seems like maybe the party is getting together and realizing, it needs to work together if they're going to win some elections.
Well, I think that, they're still going to have their fights, but it's 2014. This is game on. And so I think that with some of the races out there, particularly the open U.S. Senate seat and the in the congressional seats, too, particularly the one in the 3rd District, I think that has probably galvanized folks in the Republican Party and their varying factions to be more prone to keep their eye on the ball.
It's interesting also about this. It seems that the Democratic response, specifically to the candidacy of Jack Hatch, who is the likely nominee, I think, now for the Democratic Party, and from the state Democratic Party, I don't know if it's necessarily unified. James, you and I were talking about this. The Senate Majority Leader, Mike Ronstadt, arguably the most powerful Democrat in the state, at least in the legislature, is still saying, hey, I don't know everybody who's going to get in, but whoever our nominee is, he or she will probably have a good chance. Not necessarily a huge vote of confidence for his colleague, Senator Jack Hatch. And then we saw the night of Branstad's initial announcement out here in Des Moines, the Democratic Party was sort of poking fun. They're saying, hey, Branstad was, when Branstad first became governor, the computer was the Time Magazine person of the year. This song by Olivia Newton-John was number one on the charts, and it had a picture, and she had like the leg warmers and an early 80s outfit for sure. And it seemed that they were harping on Branstad being old, or trying to make poke fun at him being old, as opposed to his ideas being old, but more of the person being old. At least that was my thought. And I don't know if that's necessarily the best way to go after someone, particularly in a state with an aging population, and particularly when a lot of people seem to remember that. James, your thoughts on that? What do you think of the Democratic response so far?
Well,
I mean, they knew that this was coming for years, right? I mean,
and I think Democrats thought they were going to have a different candidate for governor. And what they've got Jack Hatch. If he's the candidate, he's only 4 years younger than Governor Branstad. So this, old rhetoric, what was popular in the 80s, I don't think it's going to work that well. Jack Hatch isn't the guy who can make that argument, you know, that Governor Branstad is too old and his ideas are too old. If they want to go after him, you know, on old ideas, that's certainly, you know, that's fair game. But then they have to talk about his ideas, not about, you know, the top hits of the 1980s and the fashions in the 1980s. I don't think voters are really going to be swayed by that.
Let me pipe in a little bit on this. I think the idea is to try to tap into that vein of public opinion, and it's out there, that Governor Branstad has been around for a long time, and that there may be on the part of some the desire for fresh blood. And so, you know, yes, I think you're right. You do have to, if you're going to run a successful campaign, talk about those things that the governor is not doing for the future if you hope to be successful. But by pointing out Olivia Newton-John's leg warmers and the music of the 80s, I think you, in a way that I think people can grasp, you do sort of drive home the point that he has been around for a long time. But having said that, I think you do have to make it relevant to the issues of the day.
And speaking of the relevant issues of the day and voters, Tuesday night is caucus night. Here at the State House, the legislative leaders are letting their members stay home Tuesday to participate in the caucuses. They've been encouraging, we've seen for the last couple of weeks, the parties telling people to go out to the caucuses. I believe, at least in the Des Moines stop, where the Branstad announced that they were handing out shirts to anybody who would pledge to caucus for the governor. James Lynch, why is this so important? I mean, we have the primary in June and the general in November. What's at stake here in these caucuses?
What's at stake, maybe at the top of the list, is just party building. This is when the parties sort of reorganize and rebuild themselves and also sort of set a direction with the platform resolutions that will be introduced. And that will give us a good indication of maybe where the Republican Party is going, more so than the Democratic Party. If we get a lot of resolutions being introduced around the state on, you know, dismantling the Federal Reserve, I think that's a good indication that the liberty wing of the party is, strong. If we get typical, you know, lower taxes, smaller government sorts of resolutions at Republican caucuses, it probably means the mainstream Republicans have turned out. The other thing is, in areas where there are going to be contests, the U.S. Senate race on the Republican side, in the first district, we have contests in both the Republican and Democratic races for, the nomination for the U.S. House, the third district. We'll get some indication, probably not Tuesday night or Wednesday morning, but we'll get some indication about which candidates are doing better. There's no clear results or no clear winner from the caucuses Tuesday night in those races, but we'll get an indication of whether Monica Vernon has a lot of her supporters have been elected delegates from the precinct caucuses to the county conventions, or whether Rod Blum's supporters have been elected in the Republican caucuses. So we'll get an indication, although it's probably not a real clear definitive answer to who's leading in those congressional races.
Mike, James, one of the things that I'm going to be looking for Tuesday is what things look like at the Democratic caucuses. And I'll tell you why. One of the big questions in 2014 is, what is the electorate going to look like? Is it going to look like 2010? We know it's not going to be as large as 2012, but is it going to have that more of that complexity than it did in 2010? And I think that 4 years ago, what you saw at the precinct caucuses, at least here, and I think in many other places across the state, you saw paltry turnout, and it continued into the county conventions, and you got that sense among the Democrats that there was a certain fatigue. And I think there was, after successful cycles in 2006 and 2008, and after a hard-fought 2004 election, there was some of that fatigue. And precinct turnout doesn't predetermine how you do in the fall campaign, but I thought at the time that it was a very good sign of a fatigue in a party. And what I'm going to be interested in seeing is coming in 2014, knowing what happened to them in 2010, whether the party is going to be able to build a kind of enthusiasm from the get-go that they then would hope to carry through to November.
Very good. And that's it for today's On Iowa Politics podcast. I hope it was worth your time. Thanks for listening. If you like the show, tell a friend and subscribe to us on iTunes. It'll help more people find the podcast. You can find us every week on the homepages of the Quad City Times, Sioux City Journal, Muscatine Journal, Mason City Globe Gazette, Waterloo Courier, and the Cedar Rapids Gazette. Bryce Janey, a blues musician from Marion, will take us out. If you are in a band or know a talented Iowa musician who should be on our show, drop us a line, or better yet, a sound file. And remember to follow us on Twitter, subscribe to us on iTunes, and you can find us on Stitcher. For James, Ed, and producer Max, I'm Mike Weiser. Thanks for listening. Got your back and the chips are cashed in. I don't even know where to begin. Oh Lord, won't you wash me of my sins? So I push the pedal down and I'm free like the wind. There's nothing left to say, 'cause it's just another fine day. 'Cause it's just another fine day.